Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Hello, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. It is gray and rainy and cold outside, which seems appropriate because our guest is joining us all the way from Derry, Ireland. And he said, if you want to know what Irish weather is like, just look outside your window right now. We're chatting with Liam Craig, the director of music for New York's legendary cocktail bar, The Dead Rabbit. We talk about the decade-long legacy of the bar, the shifting music and bar culture in modern Ireland, upcoming Irish bands as South by Southwest, and Poteen and Bar 1661, who makes incredible cocktails using this homemade liquor. And then we dig into the archives for a Dream Pop performance from Brooklyn's Ginger Lees, and also, if you go to our website, you can see playlists from The Dead Rabbit that pair perfectly with any cocktail for this terrible weather or beautiful weather wherever you are in the world. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on Heritage Radio Network. Liam, thank you for joining us at Snacky Tunes all the way from Derry, Ireland. Kids are asleep, you said?
Kids are asleep, and this is downtime for me now. So,
yeah, I'm about 8 hours behind you right now. So, you'll be asleep, but I'll text you, let you know when my kids go to bed. Appreciate you spending this very, you know, important hour to of dad time with us. And, you know, I remember when the Dead Rabbit opened. I was living in New York. I remember it opening. I mean, it's, I don't want to say Wall Street exactly, but like in that area of town, and thinking, what is this type of bar doing here? Because most of the cocktail bars had Lower East Side, even Williamsburg at that time, or, you know, Midtown, things like that. But now, and you're celebrating this month a decade in, it's become such an anchor and staple of the area. What do you think is responsible for its longevity and its pull of people to the space?
So it's tricky for me to comment properly, because I've only been working for the Dead Rabbit for maybe the last sort of 6-7 months. But Jack McGarry is my cousin, so I have been in and around it since it started.
Yeah.
If you had have asked me a year ago, I wouldn't have been able to give you an answer. Now, having been around it and involved in it and spent a lot of time with Jack and a lot of time with the team and in the bar, it's just quality. The quality is so high. The attention to detail is so great. The hospitality is amazing. The service is amazing. The atmosphere is amazing. And for somewhere like New York, that has obviously such a massive Irish community and an Irish expat community. Mm-hmm. The thing that struck me the first time I went into the bar was like, wow, I could be anywhere in Ireland right now. I could be anywhere on the island of Ireland. And, you know, if I couldn't see outside and I didn't hear the accents, I wouldn't know. That's just, it's just managed to nail that feel of what an actual authentic Irish pub is, eerily well. It's kind of spooky.
I mean, we talk about this whole idea, and it comes up from time to time, authenticity and whether it's a good thing or a bad thing and the point of view. But, you know, when people hear Irish bar, especially in America, it definitely conjures a stereotype, if you will. And so where does the Dead Rabbit differentiate? Because if you're saying it feels like you're in Ireland, for people who have maybe never had the pleasure to drink in Ireland, what is it about the bar and what's it tapping into?
I mean, obviously, I mean, Ireland in the last sort of 20, 30 years has grown up a lot. So there's maybe a generation of people who grew up going to bars that aren't what the Dead Rabbit is trying to be and aren't what people who sort of, even in Ireland, would sort of stereotypically assume is what an Irish bar is. But there's those mainstays of the communities across the island, of these little corner pubs, little backroom pubs that feel like they could be your granny's kitchen with just a lot more whiskey. they're homely, they're closed in, they're friendly, they're inviting, it's comfortable. And you sort of just sort of check everything. It's not trying to be anything, you know, an Irish pub, like of the type that I'm describing, it's not trying to be anything. It's just, well, we have a bit of space. We've got a load of whiskey. We've got some lovely wood. We know a couple of great carpenters. The place looks nice. The fire's lit. I'll pull up a chair and let's have a drink, you know? And so I think Dead Rabbit nails that vibe very well.
Yeah, I feel like people who maybe caught the movie Banshees of Inisherin this year had a taste of what Irish pubs were. You know, obviously, I'm sure there's some Hollywood liberties, but that wasn't that long. You know, that was this century of just like, it's a community spot. It's not plastic beads. Yeah. It's not, and God bless Dropkick Murphys, but it's not them blaring on the stereo and things like that. It's more of a place for people to meet and talk and come together.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's like the corner shop or the post office if they served alcohol.
So you got involved about 6 or 7 months ago officially. What brought you into the fold? How'd you get involved with the bar?
So like I said, so Jack's obviously my cousin, and so I've watched him from afar for the last 12. He's bar's been open for 10 years, but he's been in New York for 12. I've watched him afar and like been very impressed and awed by the success and everything. But like the our paths never crossed. My background is in the music industry here in Ireland. Mm-hmm. First years ago as a performer, and then as a producer, and then as an artist manager, and then a music educator. And so obviously there was a change in direction for the Dead Rabbit at the beginning of this year with Jack and Sean parting ways and doing their different things. And I think almost immediately Jack had a very strong vision in his head for where he wanted the Dead Rabbit to go. Mm. And it was very much to lean into this idea of authenticity, but authenticity and contemporary. So not trying to be an authentic Irish pub from the turn of the century, which was maybe a little bit the path that it was on before, mm. but more how do we represent what is happening in modern Ireland, and how do we do that through different pillars? You know, so obviously they're doing it through the drinks, you know, because obviously mm-hmm. you've got this incredible cocktail bar upstairs, and you know the basis of almost all the drinks is an Irish spirit. But how do you extend that? And so my role in that was initially just to come in and extend that via music just that was playing in the bar. So what you hear coming off, not the jukebox, but we'll call it the jukebox whenever you're in the pub, it was just sort of managed by an American third party company, and their vibe was, well, you know, it's 2 o'clock and you're in downtown Manhattan and this is probably what people want to hear. And that's, you know, that's not right. And obviously they tried to sort of make it be what they thought an Irish pub should be. And therefore you got into the territory of, again, love them, got Dropkick Murphys,
sure.
all that sort of stuff,
you know? Yeah.
Pubs. Yeah. And so my remit was really simple and really easy. It was, first of all, can you make playlists that are long enough that you can cover the opening hours of like 12 PM to 3 AM, 4 AM, have different tempos, different genres, and also like not drive the bar staff insane by hearing the same song maybe three times a day.
Yeah.
And so I kind of went away and sort of did the math on it and went, yeah, absolutely. And it's a really beautiful indication of where the music scene is in Ireland, but also globally, in that I don't think you could have done it 10 years ago just because Yeah, well, I think it's partly to do with the ease of access of technology to create music in the first place, and then how easy it is for anyone to get their stuff onto Spotify. And the software that we're using is an extension of Spotify to run the music in a bar. So with sort of 80% accuracy, if it's on Spotify, we can sort of play it in the bar, fully licensed. So there's just so much there, and there's so much to tap into. And obviously, because I'm here and because I work with Irish artists,
yes.
I'm sort of dealing with that on a day-to-day basis. And I'm seeing it from the, it's not just Dermot Kennedy, and it's not just U2 and Niall Horan and all these. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of artists and bands who are cranking out unbelievable music off a massive wide range of genres every week, every Friday. And I'm able to tap into all of that. So the answer to the initial question was, yeah, it can be done. There's enough content there for sure. Mm-hmm. It's just about sort of going through it and curating it and figuring out what we want, the different parts of the day. And so that was it. That was the first couple of months, was really just sort of pulling all that together and just sort of testing it. And obviously, as someone who's been to a lot of bars but never worked for any,
sure.
It's a, like understanding what's required at what time of the day and how the vibe needs to be and how the vibe needs to change over the course of the day. That's something I had to sort of understand. So I went over to New York in October and basically sat in the bar for a week and just sort of took notes.
What a hardship that must have been.
It was such a difficult job, I have to say. And you know, I got to sleep in a bed all to myself with no kids and sleep on until 10. It was really hard, man.
Yeah. I'm sure every other dad and
oh yeah,
it's really feeling for you back in Ireland. You mentioned a couple times about modern changes or shifting in Irish culture, and obviously we don't need to get into the whole broad of culture, but with music and maybe even food and things like that, what has changed in Ireland in the last few years to the point where it's palpable and noticeable?
There's probably an echo of what I said about the ease of access for things like Spotify. There's probably an echo of that right across the industry with things like Instagram and TikTok, you know. suddenly it's not so far-fetched that somebody in the back ass of nowhere in, you know, one of the middle counties in Ireland has access to, I had Vietnamese food once and I really liked it, and suddenly I'm following a whole bunch of, you know, people on Instagram who are into Vietnamese food, and I'm going to make a stab at it because why the hell not? And obviously, I think lockdown obviously probably played a massive part in that, because we all had however long we had of really not much else to do except really dig into our niches. So there's definitely that echo, that that Spotify echo across the other different industries. And then there's also, you know, there's also the diversification of the population. You know, so we're starting to get for the first time, we were getting the first, second generation immigrants now who are coming through and are, you know, if you were to talk to someone or you were to see someone, you would not go, oh, that person's Irish, but they are 100% Irish. They were born here, they were raised here, they were in the Irish culture, but they're also bringing in their own familial culture and cultures of the friends and the communities that they've gathered around. So you've got a lot of that coming in. I mean, of course you're getting that everywhere. And also Ireland's sort of always a little bit behind. So we're just sort of playing catch up to where everyone else sort of maybe was 20 years ago. But it's exciting. And I think the for all of its ills and evils, there's probably a lot to be said of social media really opening people up to a lot of these things. And obviously you go into a whole other conversation about how that's happened in terms of, you know, politically and economically and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But for the purposes of this
the
little
culture,
box,
the culture.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's been great, and that has to have played its part, you know. And also, I think there's a younger generation now that are sort of so steeped in that and very open minded and don't want to sort of, you know, not that they want to sort of eschew Irish culture and not have anything to do with it, but they want to, you know, they don't want to eat stew every week. They want to go, oh, I want to try Vietnamese food, or I want to try Greek food or Mediterranean food or whatever it is. And people are willing to take a crack at sort of setting up a business around that, maybe in a way again that they might not have been in the last 10 years. And then there's obviously a little bit of rebellion against the sort of the capitalist, you know, I don't want to go to a chain restaurant, you know, I want to stay local, you know, I want to help out, you know, and that's something that I've really seen sort of rise in maybe the past 6-7 years here. I mean, Derry, where I'm from, like Derry said, it's technically a city, but it's really just a big town in the corner of Ireland. And the success of the food scene here in the last sort of 5 or 6 years has just been incredible. You know, you've got Vietnamese street food, you've got unbelievable burger joints that are dealing specifically in Wagyu beef, you've got sushi places, which, you know, you say to most people around the world, yeah, it's a sushi place, but like in Derry, the fact that there is a sushi place is kind of like, that's next level, you know?
I mean, there's small towns the world everywhere, and that connectivity through social media and different technology, it changes the way that people think about the world. It's like, oh, I know about this and I want to experience it, and I can experience it in my own town.
Yeah. And I think obviously that also bleeds in into like the drinking culture, you know, because, you know, at a certain point in time, Ireland probably had a reputation of, you know, beer and whiskey. But now people are a lot more thoughtful about how they drink and why they drink. And people are open to trying different things. And even just as simple as being able to have a decent beer selection is something that's really only sort of appeared in the last sort of 10 years here. And that's exciting. And then there's also the amount of independent Irish spirits companies that are popping up all around the country. And so that's exciting. Yeah. And then you've got the cocktail thing. And then most recently, which I think is overlooked but equally exciting, is this sort of 0% thing that's happening at the minute, you know, where there's a percentage of people out there who are like, I want to go out, but I don't want to just stand around drinking Diet Coke all night, you know? And so there's definitely a push towards catering for those folk, because from a purely business perspective, obviously if you didn't cater for them, you're just cutting out, you know, buying customers, paying customers. And so, you know, so the fact that Guinness Zero existing now is a big deal. And like I myself, like I have two kids, so like I don't go out on the rip a lot anyway, but anytime I do find myself out, I'm delighted that Guinness Zero exists. Cause like I can have, I go out, I have 1 pint of regular Guinness, and I have a couple of tins of Guinness Zero, and I get to drive home and not feel like death at 7 a.m. the next morning when there's two kids jumping on the bed.
Let's take a quick musical break, and then when I come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the relationship between America and Ireland and about the bar 1661 pop-up that was done in Ireland and then also in America. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
We used to make noise. We used to make noise when we tied. But now we're silent to the high. You like to tie me. You like to tie me up at night. Are you a stranger to the light? We have a date at stake. We had a date upstate. My love for you. My love for you is strong, my dear. Like lions, tigers, jungle fear. We have a date upstate. We have a date upstate. I'll feed you remedies grown quiet in the garden, gin soaked and near broke, dry twigs into your hands, and keep your arms and your mouth for me. I give you nothing that you need. Maybe we agree. Do we agree? We have a date upstate. We have a date upstate.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with the director of music for the Dead Rabbit, Liam Craig. And while the bar is in New York, you are in Derry, Ireland. And few countries have had, I don't know how to say, if it's cultural reciprocal or just a fascination with each other, than Ireland and America. And the bars, well, I don't know if they have American traditional bars in Ireland. So they have traditional Irish bars here. But with what you've been doing with the Dead Rabbit and what the new focus of after a decade is this new sort of fresh and modern approach to the Irish bar. And we were talking about in the first part about shifting that, but you also did a reciprocal pop-up with Bar 1661 in Dublin. How did that come to be? What was the importance of actually bringing the Dead Rabbit to Ireland?
The bringing of the Dead Rabbit to Ireland is, I mean, the reason that happened, we were sort of in Ireland to promote, we sort of brought some press over to promote what we thought that modern Ireland looked like and what we thought it was important for people to see about what a modern Ireland was. And so we did, you know, great food and great restaurants, and we did coffee, because like I talked a little bit about authenticity in the first half, and like one of my favorite things about the bar is that the coffee and the Dead Rabbit Irish coffee is roasted in Ireland. Like, I think that's I think that tells you everything, you know. So so we visited them, which is Calendar Coffee out near Galway, and So one of the stops that we did was in Bar 1661. And the reason for stopping in and sort of doing a Dead Rabbit pop in, or Dead Rabbit pop up, I should say, there, was because we sort of had already knew that come February, we were going to have the guys from 1661 over in New York, and they were going to do their pop up. So it was really just to sort of check in, show what a contemporary Irish bar is and can be. Show off a little bit about what the Dead Rabbit's about. But almost as in all things that we do, it was really just to sort of champion people who are right at the zenith of something that's really good and really exciting that's happening at home. And so what they're doing is incredible, because they're dealing almost exclusively, not entirely, but almost exclusively in poaching, however you want to say it, which is, I'm not the person to go into a really deep conversation about this, but it's basically the Irish equivalent of moonshine. I think is probably the best way that I can make an analogy. So, like if you think of like, we talked about Banshees and Minasheerin.
Yeah.
You know, there definitely would have been some poaching kicking about there.
Just a jug of brown or white liquor. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the kind of vibe, but they are, I mean, poaching for so many years has had that, it's this unbelievably strong alcohol that someone has brewed in a shed at the bottom of a garden, and it'll blow your head off. And it's a means to an end. That's the sort of the vibe that it's had for years and years and years. But what 1661 are really trying to do are try and push it as that. No, it's not. It's an Irish spirit in the same way that whiskey is an Irish spirit or gin is an Irish spirit. It's its own thing. It's unique. It's got a flavor profile. It works well. It combines well with other things. And to prove it, we're going to go to New York and we're going to put on this pop-up for 4 days, and we're going to put on this incredible menu of incredible drinks. And it's not going to be anything like what you've tasted before. And it's all made using Irish poaching, which is like, I think it's about to be the crest of a wave here in terms of like the sort of the next drink revolutions. Cause I think Irish whiskey, not that I think Irish whiskey is going anywhere, and there's still some incredible new Irish whiskeys popping up,
of course.
But there's definitely been a real wave of it in the last sort of 10 years. Gin, obviously for obvious reasons in terms of time to make, has had its renaissance.
Especially in India and things like that, and Goa is doing a ton of botanicals, local type of artisanal gins.
But I think that poaching is now, I think it's its time, and in 1661 are just in the same way that Dead Rabbit was in early in the financial district back in whatever year, 2013. I think that 1661 are really in at the start of the line for here's Irish poaching and it's coming and here's what we can do with it, you know? So, and it was awesome. It was just, it's such a fresh take. For us culturally, it's a big thing to see it come back. And you know, so you talk to anybody in Ireland, you say, "Oh, there's this bar in Dublin; they're doing poaching cocktails," and everyone's like, "What? That's wow!" But it's like whenever you bring it to America, obviously that's such a unique experience because it's not readily available there. And
Well, I mean, there are certain laws here that keep it from being sold on the regular, but I guess as a special pop-up, there's obviously a workaround. Now obviously people are going to want to try and experience this, so when can they actually experience it at the Dead Rabbit?
Well, this is the problem. The problem is that's happened. It's been and gone. So that was a 4-day pop-up at the start of this month.
I know. I mean, we're coming a little bit late because I know that February has been the decade birthday celebration of the Dead Rabbit, but you know, it's going to be tough for people to listen to hear about that. how do I say this?
Skyscanner.net, and you type in New York to Dublin. And then you get here, you type in Bar 1661 into Google Maps, and you go there and you get yourself an Irish poaching cocktail.
So let me ask you this. So when Bar 1661 came to New York, and they saw the Dead Rabbit, what did they think? Because, you know, it's people, when you travel around, everyone has their own idea of like America and like what it is, especially in New York or an Irish bar in New York. But you yourself said it feels very transportative. Did they feel like they had left Ireland? Were they like, this is where it hits, this is where it feels a little bit different? What was it like to like host people from the motherland?
I think, I mean, it's all, anytime it happens, it's always very natural because within, like, I mean, Irish people at any point, at any time, at any part of the world, give us a minute and we'll know somebody who knows somebody and then we're in, we're good, you know. And you add, you know, beer and cocktails to the mix, it's just a good time. So having anybody from back home in the bar just feels like having somebody from your extended family calling in for a drink, you know. I think those guys, I don't think that they had, I think they felt it both, I think they felt at home both in terms of like spiritually or whatever, because obviously the downstairs pub part of the Dead Rabbit does feel like home. It feels like a traditional Irish pub, but also like the cocktail bar upstairs, the vibe of that, the lighting of that, the mood, the atmosphere. It's not a million miles away from what the guys have set up back in Dublin. You know, it's like I've been to 1661. They did a really good job of recreating their vibe. You know, they had their own servers, they had their menus, they were talking very excitedly and animatedly through their drinks. And I mean, even the music, like I ended up just taking the guy's music and going, like, well, here, just give me your playlists and I'll just make them happen here. Because, you know, the cocktail bars, it sort of exists in its own time and space away from the downstairs pub, you know. It's a different vibe, it's a different thing. So we just, to make them feel as at home as possible, you know, we just stuck their music on. So anybody who did manage to get an experience that, if they did find themselves in Dublin, I went to the OG 1661, I think that they would feel, I definitely got this experience. I'm glad I'm here in Dublin, but I definitely got this experience when I went back in New York. I think that's pretty cool.
So as you start looking towards the future and you sort of start to make the shift with more music, how do you see the Dead Rabbit and then also what you're doing with music expanding? What do you want to do? How do you want to break ground? How do you want to tie the music? Obviously the experience in the bar is one thing, but you know, so much of a I hate to use the word brand, but a business now exists online and outside of a physical space. And sometimes people want it on their own time and, you know, in their own part of the world.
Yeah. I mean, the easy part of that answer is that the Dead Rabbit is expanding. So by the end of 2023, we'll have locations in obviously New York, but also in Austin and New Orleans. Mm. And there's plans for more in the coming years, but those are the ones that I'm very focused on right now. In terms of where we're going and what we're doing with music, we're really starting to lean into live programming and making a really big and conscious effort to bring modern Irish artists over as regularly as we can, to put them on in the bar in a way and at a time that makes sense to just like really put it in the face of the customers of, this is Irish music. I don't know what
now,
you think.
This is Irish music now. Yeah,
you have not heard of this act, but we promise you it's good. You know, and that I think that in that is sort of where I want to go. So there's a space on the third floor in the bar that's like a bookable function room essentially, and I want to basically once a month turn that into an intimate acoustic venue where we bring artists over, it's candlelit. And build a reputation similar to, I mean, it'll never be Tiny Desk, but similar to Tiny Desk where people will subscribe to Tiny Desk and they'll not know the artist that comes on every week, but they'll know that it's going to be good because Tiny Desk have a reputation of quality.
Yes.
And that's sort of what I want to have in the Dead Rabbit, but specifically for Irish artists. Hey, come along last Tuesday of the month, come upstairs, come on in, have an Irish coffee. You'll get two, three artists. It'll be amazing. You won't have heard of them, but you'll love it and you'll go away and you'll check them out online and you'll buy a t-shirt and this, that, and the other. So that's the next step for me in terms of leaning into that. As well as that, then there's the other part of my job, I think, is very easy. And it's just sort of establishing connections that really probably should have always been made and probably should have always existed, but there hasn't been a person or a company or whatever, or the idea just sort of position somebody here and go, I'm going to reach out to these people. I'm just going to tie all this stuff together, you know? So in New York, for example, tying in with the Irish Arts Center, who are there full time doing great work. They're bringing artists over. Let's sort of work together.
Make it a stop.
yeah, make it a stop. You know, we'll bring artists over and they can play with you. You could bring artists over and they can play with us. Obviously, with Austin opening, there's a really obvious connection there with South by Southwest.
Coming up around the corner.
With my other hat on, have been there a couple of times already. And so every year at South By, you've got 20 Irish bands in town anyway.
Yep.
So let's do some stuff with them. Let's do a road to South by Southwest where you come in, you stop in New York, you do a show with us, head down, you do your stuff at South By, but also you can stop in and do a set in the bar in Austin. We're also setting up like a sort of Tiny Desk style, Mahogany Session style live session thing where, you know, you come in, you play a song, totally stripped back, one take, one camera, and we're going to be starting a sort of like a YouTube series of those things.
Nice.
You know, so it's sort of leaning into, it's basically wanting to curate and bring artists over directly, but also saying to any artists who are coming through, like artists who are on labels or bigger labels that we maybe don't have access to, hey, you're not going to come and do a set in the bar, and that's fine, but the space is beautiful. Come in and do a session. If you're launching a new record, come in and do a listening party. Do mm-hmm. you know, have a, bring your A&R team in and do a strip back session for them, whatever it happens to be. We're here and we're available. We want to work with you, because it's as much about being a touchstone for Irish music as it is being, we're Irish music, you know. There's a more subtle version of it, you know.
Yeah. Well, Liam, I appreciate you taking the time, and I'd be remiss though if I didn't ask you. Perfect pairing, drink and song.
Oh, don't do that to me.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it to you. Do it to you. You've been with your kids all day. It's 8:30 your time. We just had a nice conversation. It's on the spot. How about I give you the drink? I'll give you the Irish coffee because we've talked about it. What's your song to pair with the Irish coffee?
Okay, it's gonna be I need to check Spotify because I can't remember the name of the song, because this is what happens whenever I build all these playlists, right?
No, I know, and we're gonna include the playlists when we post this up to the site. We have a couple links to playlists so people can check them out.
Okay, so Dead Rabbit Irish Coffee and a song called Last to Leave by an artist from Dublin called Alvaretti, who we just had in the bar in February playing. She's a great friend of mine. She's also one of my favorite artists on the island. Everybody should go check her out. She's just incredible. And she'll be at South by Southwest. So if you're an Austin listener, jump in, come and see us in March. But yeah, Alvaretti, Last to Leave.
Irish coffee. There we go. All right. Well, Liam, thank you so much. If people want to check out the Dead Rabbit or listen to any playlists, where can they go?
The deadrabbit.com or Dead Rabbit Pub on Instagram and Twitter.
Amazing. Shout out again to Bailey, who's been crushing it, getting us some killer guests. You're our first guest live from Ireland. So super excited to have that. We have a song from the archives and then the Ginger Lees, an archive live performance here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network. Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We have Ginger Lee's live in studio. Welcome.
Hey.
All wonderful. Hey. Five in.
Hello.
Hi.
2013, forming a band from Long Island. How did you decide to take this path of music when Long Island is typically known for the pop punk sweetness that comes from there? And what are the influences that brought you all together?
That's a great question. I'm Matt, actually. Yeah, lead songwriter, rhythm guitarist of the band. I actually started putting on house shows in my house in Valley Stream, Long Island, around 2010, and I met a lot of bands like Lost Boy and Sloth Bear and a lot of different great acts that are still around today. And through there, I actually met a lot of great like indie and great pop musicians, including Twin Sister and a lot of other bands that I really had no idea that was happening in Long Island, because it seemed like it was all full of post-hardcore and a lot of emo music and, you know, stuff that I didn't really like at that time. And we ended up meeting a lot of musicians, and they ended up inviting my old band to play in Brooklyn. And we ended up finding a nice little community and a family full of people that, you know, just shared this same idea of experimental pop music and wanting to, you know, further this idea of just good rock and roll, you know, not really genre-based music, just, you know, nice rock and roll.
Did your house have a name?
Yeah, it was called Nana's.
How did you get the name?
It was named after my grandmother. She was sadly in the hospital at the time, so I figured name it Nana's. Everybody has a Nana, you know, or somebody, so I figured, you know, it's a nice name to have at the time. But yeah, through there I actually met Kevin, our bassist, who and his old band, who was called Gaza Striptease, one of the greatest names I've ever heard.
Great name.
And through there, we kept putting on shows, and Kevin actually went to college with Colin, our guitarist. And one night, he ended up introducing Colin to me, and Colin just turned me on to more New Zealand music and stuff from Flying Nun and some of the best indie pop that I have ever seen, the Chills and Clean and everything that, you know, has influenced me so much. And after that point, we played one show with our old singer at Muchmore's, and I think after that show, Brian, our drummer, came out to me when I was having a cigarette outside.
Really drunk.
Yeah, pretty drunk.
You are.
We're pretty drunk at that point. But he offered because Colin was playing bass at that time, and Kevin was playing drums, and he actually offered if we needed a second guitar. And I said, well, you know, Colin's really our lead guitarist, and we would really love to have a more solid drummer. And if you're by any chance, you know, a drummer,
actually a drummer.
Yep. And he's like, guess what? I've been a drummer for most of my life. So I could pretty much do that.
I wasn't giving up. I was like, I need to be in this band.
No way. And then 12 songs later, he learned everything. And then, you know, we became a band. And then, you know, after our old singer left, you know, we found our new beautiful singer, Jackie Mendoza, through our mutual friend, Chris Topa.
Thanks,
Topa. And, yep, thank you, Chris. And, sure. You know, the rest, as they say, is history.
Why do you think that all of the kind of pop experimental bands were hiding in Long Island, or where do you think they were, just like bedroom or smaller venues before Nana's like existed?
Like,
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I think it was. No, you're completely right. I think it was mostly like an idea of just this fear of pay to play because so many venues in Long Island were strictly post hardcore pay to play. And funny enough, one of our first shows as Gingerlies, me and Kevin played as Gingerlies. We played in drag. We dressed up. We played at a post hardcore show with post hardcore kids throwing beer cans at us and really giving us a hard time that night. Days. But you know, that was the thing. I think that because of that, you know, a lot of these experimental pop bands couldn't really find a footing and they couldn't really find like a unique community to be a part of across Long Island, and some were from Suffolk County, some were from Nassau County, but you know, it was really a lot of bands like to me Twin Sister and Lost Boy and Color Tongue and Sloth Bear especially, and a lot of great bands that, you know, really brought an amazing spirit of kids that shared the same idea of just wanting to create amazing experimental pop music across Long Island. And, you know, all you really need, like they say, is, you know, the match to light the fire. And all I had to do was open the venue and people just came.
Does it still exist?
It doesn't. Sadly, you know, we had to sell the house, but occasionally I'll host shows out there every once in a while. But the best thing that came out of that was all the friends and all the fans that we made that supported us and support our music and really help us out now, because we all stick together. And, you know, every time we play together, we always have that Long Island represent attitude, because, you know, we all know how hard it was for, you know, nobody to care about our music, nobody to listen to us, nobody to know that we exist, and for us to have to say that we were a Brooklyn band or we were a New York band. But, you know, now we all live in Brooklyn, we all stay out here, so I could honestly say that we are a New York band. But yeah, you know, it's sad that that had to end, but it's beautiful that there are so many venues around here, like Shea Stadium and Sunnyvale, and so many places that support
Shea Stadium's in tough times.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you still bleed Long Island.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, in certain ways, there's not that much of a scene in actually Long Island, and I don't think, sadly, there ever will be. But, you know, it's a nice place. It's a beautiful place to grow up. And I mean, just to really think about it, you know, you have all these kids, like you have me, you have Kevin, you have Colin, who all live in, you know, different places. And we all have this same attitude towards rock and pop music. You know, we all really want to do it. We're, you know, not conceited or flooded, you know, with different ideas. You know, we all really respect the truth of what we really grew up on.
Let's also not forget Queens.
Well, that's Queens. True. Can't speak for everybody here. This man, my drummer.
We have parts of Queens in here as well.
Yeah. Can we hear a song?
Absolutely.
What are you going to play for us first?
We're going to play our first song called Elsewhere. It's off our upcoming album that hopefully should be out this coming fall. So this song is called Elsewhere.
Live on Snacky Tunes.
Seems like I've been using someone time. Can't recall the love that I'm after, broken nose. Pay for all the chances you're supposed to have. If I could, then I'll try 100 times before to get through the absence, seeing distant shores. I wonder if I change colors throughout her. World could be a fantasy. I live through days of hustle memory. The differences you make up between us on each other. Ice cream melts the bottoms of your toes, turning malice into affection. You always the sand. Well, I was dreaming, holding your hand. We hide under covers together. The world could be our fantasy. We'll be right back.
Let's talk about the first EP. How did it come together? You know, Matthew, you said you were the main songwriter, but how did the rest of you influence it and, you know, a release and also a Japan release as well?
My turn, I guess. How this came about? Let's see. Well, we decided to go record at this place called Mama Coco's Funky Kitchen.
That's Colin, by the way.
Oh, this is Colin, by the way. Can y'all hear me?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, cool. yeah, so we recorded there. It was at this one place in Lefferts Gardens. You know, it was like a collective, a literally like a very tight-knit collective, very positive attitude, very eclectic. They liked a lot of funk. They're very funk-based. It was really not in our realm, but the guy, Oliver, was really good at what he did. He knew what we wanted. So it was in 2013, and right around then is when we like really formed the name. Brian still wasn't with us at the time, but we got that stuff together, and that day forward, when the first day we went to the studio, we're like, we're Gingerlys now. We're Gingerlys. This is it.
Henceforth, we'll forever be known as
Gingerlys. Yes, and I remember the first day we were doing that. On the way to the studio, we said, let's do this. Let's get that. And then we self-released it that fall, like September or whatever. And then I think we got approached in October by that label, Shelf Life, and that really changed it for us. We're like, okay, now we're like getting put up into there. Being released as a 7-inch, and that came out in spring of 2014.
What was the idea behind releasing it yourself? I mean, a lot of bands are going so many different directions now. I'd be curious to know you're thinking, like, let's just get this out there.
Well, it was our first thing, you know, so we didn't know, you know, it's really hard. Even for us, our forthcoming release, it's so much back and forth with labels, so we would have gotten nowhere with that. And we're just lucky that label even came to us. We didn't expect that. But, you know, for the time before that, you know, we had that self-release. People liked it. It was getting featured on some little things. Friends were talking about it. It wasn't much, but we played it and we celebrated it. It was good. And then we got really lucky that following October of 2013 when that label said, hey, I mean, you were flipping out. It was crazy. I remember I was at Cake Shop seeing the memories. And all of a sudden, yeah, I remember it was crazy.
Yeah, we don't really have too many expectations. Like, you know, with the EP, we were sitting on these songs. I had my old band, which had the worst name in the entire world. Shattered Darlings and Liquid Kisses.
There you go.
Wow.
Horrible.
They had to get that second piece in there, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But, you know, coming out of that, we really, you know, focused on getting these new songs because I was writing a lot of, like, more noise, like, shoegaze songs at that time. And these new songs, I really wanted to have a tight and concise, like, pop structure. And, you know, it was really Colin that introduced me to Flying Nun and, you know, like all these indie pop bands that were so jangly, and his style of playing was so different from any other lead guitarist that I ever played with. And, you know, we really wanted to get the songs out there. We felt so strongly about these songs. We felt so passionately about what we were writing at that time that we really just wanted to show the world, and we just wanted to show everybody what we were capable of. And, you know, people just really took a hold so quickly. It was really amazing and so beautiful. We had so many fans and so many people who were so responsive so quickly. It really blew us away. And we still have to thank all our fans. And
how did the release on 2670 come about?
That was recent. That was like last year.
That was, yeah. That was pretty interesting. That was all, you know, thank you so much to Hajime Sakuma. You know, he really just contacted us.
Thank you, Hajime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jackie had the pleasure of meeting him.
Yeah, Jackie actually took a trip to Japan. She had the pleasure of meeting him.
I went to Tower Records and I saw REP.
Yeah, you can actually pick it up for sale.
You're like, you know what? I'll take the sacrifice. I'll go meet him in Tokyo. No, I got this. I got this. Oh,
pretty much.
It's in the Western pop rock.
Section. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, not all heroes wear capes. Am I right?
Yeah,
level 4.
Yeah, it was great. We honestly, you know, we just he contacted us. You know, we got an email one day, and he reached out and said how big of a fan he was of our songs, and said that he just, you know, never heard, you know, songs that inspired him as much as these
songs
they
inspired
did.
Him.
Yeah, they wow. And he just really wanted to put them out as quickly as possible. So, you know, we said absolutely. Like, one of our collectively our all-time dreams was to have something out in Japan. So to have that was the most amazing thing. And the most special thing about that was we actually sat down and we recorded a brand new song for that called Corduroy Star. Sadly, we won't play that today, but
it opened the show.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. Yeah, yeah. So it opened the show. But we recorded that song as a special bonus track for that EP. So
first song to feature Jackie as well.
That's true. Yeah, all our other songs featured all the vocalists. Yeah, but just wait, because we have about 10 to 11 more that'll be coming out very soon. Yep. That'll feature all Jackie songs that that we really think have just, you know, brought us to a completely new and entirely, you know, just amazing new level than we thought we could be with the EP.
Well, we're going to talk about the new record, but let's get one more song in before then. What are you going to play for us next?
I think we're going to play the song called New Toys. My dad accidentally threw out my box of all my X-Men Mighty Max action figures, and boy, did I ever get sad. So, how do I... So I had to write a song about that. Yeah. Boy, do I love these four people that surround me right now. So we're going to play New Toys, and we really hope you enjoy it.
Weird toys.
Where are you right now in the new record process?
I think that we're actually very close to being finished. We've been working on these songs while we've been writing these songs for at least like the past 3 to 5 years. Well, myself, I've been working on them for a while, but we've been working with our producer, Connor Hanwick, who was in the drums, who, I mean, it's been an absolutely amazing experience. We never thought that we'd be able to work with somebody that challenged us on the record as much as he was able to. So really to break down our songs and really to take out all the parts that he felt were unnecessary and to bring in such a new aesthetic, it really felt amazing to work with him. But we're, you know, we have the record pretty much, you know, completed. It's really great. We have, you know, a little bit of info that we can't necessarily talk about right now, but we'll be able to talk about it.
No exclusive drop. We understand.
So, but we'll be able to talk about it very soon. We possibly have a co-release in the works. Hopefully we can assure you this album will be out this year in 2017, possibly towards the end of the year. But, you know, with all God's hope, we hope that it can possibly be out during that time. But yeah, we're very far along with that. We've even been demoing a lot of new songs. And at this point, I've been taking a little bit more of a backseat towards the songwriting aspect. And I really want everybody in the band to write their own songs. So I think the next EP that we release after this album comes out is going to be a song contributed by each member of the band, by Brian, by Colin, by Kevin, by Jackie, and everybody's going to, you know, take the forefront, really going to start writing those songs.
When you're working with such a great producer, how hard is it to put the ego away from the collective and to really hear them? Or is that why you go and align with the producer that's so strong and has such a good background?
That's why we go with him.
Please, Jackie, yeah.
Well, I thought he, like, helped us a lot and to fill the gaps, because we're not as experienced with, like, actually being in a studio and recording a whole bunch of songs. So he was definitely, like, helpful. He, like, sped up the process of recording.
It was interesting. It wasn't necessarily intimidating, but it was very, like, it was a very amazing process. We really, like, you know, couldn't, like, I don't know, it's a little bit difficult to, you know, answer that question, you know,
yeah,
just,
of course.
Yeah, like, you know, just in a very blunt way, but, you know, it was very incredible. It was an experience that we wouldn't trade for really anything else. It was something that challenged us as musicians, something that made us, you know, actually become better musicians. It really made these songs stand out, and he really, you know, he was literally like our sixth member, our extra gingerly. He really produced these songs in such a way that without him, these songs would not have the characteristics that they have right now. They really sound so pronounced and so beautiful, and we really couldn't be happier having an album to sound like this.
So while it's in its final stages of being put together, when people hear it for the first time, what emotion and thoughts do you want them to come away with?
I think mostly, at least for me, everything in my line of songwriting, for me, I have a very fragmented memory. Like, I really can't remember a lot of years of my life, so it takes me a long time to work on lyrics. So when I actually put these lyrics together, I actually don't really realize I'm a little unconscious towards the aspect that I'm actually writing these stories, not necessarily about myself, but my interactions with my best friends, with my bandmates, with the people that I love and that I care about. And they tell these little stories that I feel like are highly relatable to, like, everybody in the world, because it's really the basis of human connection, of really just understanding the human spirit. And I think, like, those songs and the writing and, you know, the aesthetics that all those songs, like, will come through, will really show people the depth in our band, that we're not just, you know, the sweet juicy fruit that you might have heard on the Jump Rope EP, that there's a little bit more depth to Gingerly's than you might think there is. But yeah,
so it's evolved over time.
It absolutely has, and I think it's only going to keep evolving. I think we're all very confident in our songwriting skills at this point, and I think that we've only been writing more songs, and we're only going to get more prolific as time goes on. We just, you know, honestly, our whole thing is that we just want to keep recording songs and releasing songs as long as possible, and we're going to stick together, and we're going to stay a band for, you know, as long as we possibly can. I mean, you can look at us now. We're all best friends. We love each other. We'll never stop loving each other. No matter what we've been through, we're in it for the long run.
Before we get out of here, I want to make sure I mention you have some shows coming up as well in New York.
We do. We actually have a very interesting show coming up on the 31st of this month with the Sea Life and Denmaid, both bands from this label, Babe City Records.
And
that,
Bueno.
Oh, and Bueno. Oh, yeah. Excuse me. Oh, I completely forgot. Bueno. Yeah. Extremely stacked bill. Yeah. Bueno is probably collectively one of our favorite bands going around right now. And they actually co-released something on Babe City and Exploding in Sound this past year. So, you know, hopefully our dream would be to release something on Babe City, and we'll see if that dream becomes a reality at some point. But yeah, for right now, we're very excited for the 31st. I think we have a few things, you know, brewing, but nothing set in stone for April right now. But we're actually going on tour towards the end of April. Brian, do you know more about that?
Yeah, so we're going to do Connecticut, Massachusetts, Philly, and we're doing a kickoff show April 20th here in New York with our friends Holy Tunics. So you guys should definitely come out to that.
We will be there.
And our collective audience as well, too, not just me and my brother. Well, thank you all for coming. It's so great to meet all of you and to have you play in studio. Big shout out to Cattle Black as well. Thank you for a really deep and engaging interview. Before we get off here, where can people find you? Get all the information on the new record, catch you on tour, buy tickets, hear the EP.
You can totally find us on Spotify. For you, I know it's not really great, but I'm sure most people have Spotify right now. If you want to stream the Jump Rope EP.
Yeah, SoundCloud too.
That's right. It is on SoundCloud and it's on Bandcamp. I think we would all suggest you to go to Bandcamp because Bandcamp has our Japanese release with Relate to You and all these different things. And, you know,
Corduroy Star.
Oh, yeah, Corduroy Star. Wow. So this is me. It's actually called Smells Like Teen Spirit. That's my fault. Confusing song titles.
Also,
but,
yeah, also follow Jackie Mendoza and her work. She always puts us on.
Please do. Yeah. Follow Colin's other band, Q.
Follow Mels.
And, I actually have another project called Mels with Lizzie Wakefield, who's in Fruit and Flowers, and Brian Thornton and Matthew Sklar and Brian Alvarez, our drummer, is actually the drummer in the Mels as well. We're a little bit more of a new wave power pop band, but I would like you guys to check us out too. We just released our first single, McAllister, and you know what? I gotta say, I love my Ginger Lees. I love this band. Thank you, Snacky Tunes Radio. Thank you, everybody, for letting us come down here for all this pizza, for everything. This has been one of the greatest times we've ever had. Oh man, that crowd. Wow. That crowd.
Big crowd out here tonight.
Wow, that crowd is just...
Yes!
That crowd is just getting... Jump Rope. Wow, I can't even believe it. Wow. But yeah, if you want to find that, you know, you can find that song. But yeah, this is going to be our last song for the day. This is called Turtle Doves. This song is written about my extreme passion for Home Alone, so...
Home Alone 2.
Home Alone 2. Well, Home Alone 2. Yeah, two Turtle Doves. Everything except the third. This song is called Turtle Doves. We really hope you enjoy it. Thank you, Snacky Tunes Radio.
Thanks for being here. Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.